Good luck. Call Resource Committee to order. Call Resource Committee to order, and for the record, Senator Frank, Senator Halpert, Senator Zaroff, Senator Elias, and Senator Jones are present. Today's agenda, we have a hearing on appointment for the Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner. And John Sandor is here. John, would you like to open up? We'll open up with statements from the commissioner, and then go to some questions from the committee, and then some testimony. Thank you. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Sandor, Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before this committee and will briefly introduce and summarize information that was provided to your committee. Then we'll be pleased to respond to any questions on these or other matters. With regard to the organization of the Department of Environmental Conservation, as you know, we administer a broad range of federal and state laws, and in assuming the administration of this department, I decided to retain the existing organization for a period of about 6 months to do an organizational analysis and to do some audits of different program activities to identify the strengths of the department, the weaknesses, and to build upon the strengths and to try to correct the weaknesses. The department will be celebrating its 20th anniversary this coming June, and the department has developed over the past two decades a very competent professional and technical staff, and I'm pleased to be able to work with this group of professionals. The department is organized into four primary divisions: Department of Division of Environmental Health, Division of Environmental Quality, Division of Administrative Services, and the Division of Facilities Construction and Operations. And we've got three regional offices that are located or headquartered in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. An organizational chart that you have in your packets summarizes total staffing of roughly 500 people. And the largest of the divisions is the Division of Environmental Quality, which has some 330 people. The department has grown rapidly, doubling in size in the last 3 years. And this has led to some of the problems that I'm going to mention shortly. In addition to an organizational analysis, the department has initiated several audits and actions which are going to be helpful in strengthening the department. We had asked for and received an audit by the Division of Personnel Management in the Department of Administration. That audit has been completed and identified some major areas of personnel management that are going to have to be addressed. One of the options that we're looking at, and as a matter of fact, with the Department of Administration, is to temporarily at least pull back the personnel management authorities from the Department of Environmental Conservation and to retrain and correct those deficiencies in the personnel management. Another audit that is underway and is nearly completed is an audit of the so-called 470 fund. And this audit of the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Response Fund has been completed in draft form and identifies some major weaknesses in the management of that fund. Additionally, we are auditing and reviewing the way in which the department administers and maintains its control over property expenditures. And one of the primary weaknesses in the administration of the 470 fund was the fact that funds can be expended from that fund from, by different departments, and there's a lack of adequate accountability in that program. The department has also been evaluating the backlog of water and sewer projects, particularly in the rural villages. And this backlog of projects now total over $110 million and cannot be addressed probably practically in a 1 or 2 year period, but probably more like a 3 to 5 year period. Indeed, in order to bring the state's compliance with safe drinking water standards and to be sure that all of our communities have safe drinking water and proper sewage treatment systems, may even be a more realistic objective to try to achieve those objectives by the end of the century. I regret saying that, but this is one of the real problems that the department in the state of Alaska faces. We are going to move ahead with some reorganization July 1, and shortly thereafter, based on the organizational analysis and the audits that I've mentioned. These will not be really major changes. The primary move will be to split the Division of Environmental Quality into two divisions, Division of Environmental Quality and then a Division of Spill Prevention and Response Group. We found that the in both the audits of the 470 Fund and in other organizational reviews and analyses that our weakness is in the administration of that particular activity. And finally, the department has inaugurated a number of formal community agreements. And these community agreements are intended to have the Department of Environmental Conservation work cooperatively with communities in developing cost-effective solutions to problems in those communities. Three communities have agreements in place. These are Ketchikan, Sandpoint, and Unalaska. In addition, draft community agreements are being reviewed with the Kenai Peninsula Borough, St. Paul, and Fairbanks. In addition, we're working with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, as well as the Nana Regional Corporation, in identifying opportunities for perhaps clusters of cooperative agreements with villages. In the packets of material that you were given, I identified the department's objectives for 1991. I'll simply title them as the primary objectives of the department in this year. The first is to follow up on the Exxon Valdez oil spill cleanup and restoration work. That effort, of course, in cooperation with other departments and of the state and the federal agencies and with Exxon is continuing, in fact, underway. The second primary objective is preparation for future oil and hazardous substance spills. This is, again, one of the major problem areas that we're dealing with. And we want to be certain that the state, in particular the oil industry, are in fact in compliance with both state and federal laws. Third, we want to work with the legislature and with the local communities in developing safe water and waste disposal systems in all our communities. As I pointed out, we have this backlog of over 60 projects totaling $120 million. The way in which we are prioritizing those is by working with community and regional affairs, health and social services, and identifying those facilities that have generated health problems, hepatitis A, and meningitis, also identifying those community systems that have the potential of generating these kinds of health problems. And our intent is to try to prioritize our work to correct those problems. Fourth area of emphasis is to improve the management of solid waste. This is a big problem, and of course, the prevention of that waste is an important aspect of that. So we've been pleased with the work with the legislature in identifying opportunities for recycling and focusing more attention on that problem. Fifth, we want to improve the management of hazardous waste in the state. State does not now have any approved hazardous waste treatment and disposal sites. We want to, within the next 2 to 3 years, identify at least one and preferably three hazardous waste sites that would be approved under federal and state laws, so that hazardous waste within the state can be treated and disposed of here, as opposed to transporting such waste to Utah, Oregon, or elsewhere. Sixth, we need to work with the industry to assure environmentally sound projects. This is it's imperative that the Department of Environmental Conservation work with industry to make sure that the activities of those industries meet the air, water, and other environmental quality objectives specified in federal and state law. Finally, we're working with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and the other departments in a major rural development initiative. And it is our belief that indeed these capital improvement projects, such as the water and sewer system projects that are referred to, can be enveloped in a part of those of that rural development initiative. Finally, with the completion of 5 months with the Department of Environmental Conservation, I'm very optimistic about the work of the department. Again, the department has a remarkable array of specialists in different professional and technical fields. Although the organizational analysis and the audits that were undertaken reveal some very serious deficiencies and problems, it's my view that these can be corrected. Employee and community response to our initiatives to improve DEC's service to the communities have been very positive. Employee participation in the organizational analysis has all been very positive, also has been positive. And although we can expect our environmental responsibilities to increase, I'm confident the department is prepared to meet this challenge. Chairman, this summarizes what was in the thick packet. The packet includes biographical information and other information that have been briefly summarized here. And I'd be pleased to answer any questions on these or other matters.
Okay. Questions? Committee? Senator Cotton.
I assume we're on the telephone. We're on the telephone. Well, you're one controversial guy, I guess. Had more mail suggesting that we not confirm you than any other commissioner that I can ever remember. And you know, one of the things that's come up is the role that you've played with the Alliance here in Juneau. And I'm not even sure why that should be such an important question. Maybe you can start by telling me why you think. I know you've responded to some allegations about that. I'm curious about why that's such a big deal that you were involved with the Alliance and now the commissioner of DEC. Can you see why that should be a controversial situation?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, I think perhaps because the Alliance has been so effective in perhaps exploring opportunities for improving our future. I think, as the information that's included in your packet clearly shows, there was a statewide mailing, at least, that distributed information that related to the Alliance for Juneau's Future. My tenure as regional forester from the period 1976 to 1984, and also made reference to some secret revelation of materials to industry and oil contingency plans or whatever else. And as the material that I provided to the members of this committee shows, the fact that this information is false, I was pleased that the Juneau Empire in an editorial, I think this last Tuesday, you characterized this as a comic book conservation and pointed out that this kind of a tactic is the Empire suggests the best thing that could be said about this information is that it ought to be recycled, since it's printed on recycled paper. But I'm pleased that you raised the question. I had thought it was put to bed, but let me, since this false publication had been so widely distributed, merits some response. We first of all pass around to you the regional foresters' recommendations on the Thomas Land Management Plan.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that.
Let me just to say that particular.
I was referring to your association with the clients.
But I'm just putting it in the context of the falseness of the total letter. That charge said that I had actually advocated the harvesting of all old growth. In fact, as a regional forester, and what this specific handout reveals is that I recommended formally to the Congress as regional forester. We had a number of alternatives that I developed for the Thomas Land Management process. The allocation summary that's before you, which shows that my recommendation was that 52% of the Tongass National Forest be designated as wilderness or roadless areas. Additionally, 24% for intensive use. In total, what this means, Mr. Chairman, is that after a 100-year period of management under Congress, two-thirds of the forest, of the old-growth forest, would be retained. That disposes of that falsehood. The second item, which was widely distributed anonymously, I might add, was the allegation that I was the founder of the Alliance for Juneau's Future, which was formed for the sole purpose of promoting the reopening of the AJ mine. That's totally false in that one, the founders of that organization were a group of... The founders of that organization were a group of business and labor people who met for several months. They did retain me as their executive director, and purposes well publicized in this community was really to promote economic diversity, including the reintroduction of mining, to improve transportation access, specifically by ferries, roads, air transportation systems. Third, to develop opportunities for generation of energy. Our publications, our activities are widely covered in support of the DIPAC fish hatchery project, the fisheries project at Douglas Harbor. Our group is involved in the recreation maintenance of the Perseverance Trail. That is another one of those statements that's partly true, that indeed I was the executive director, but totally false in characterizing that as a single purpose organization. I did formally write to the executive directors of both the Alaska Environmental Lobby and the organization that mailed and asked really who authored this sheet. Both in the response to my March 25 letter, as well as the letter I sent out yesterday by fax to find that out, had not been answered this morning, or this afternoon, I should say, prior to this hearing. Ms. Schwartz tells me that no one single individual authored that sheet, but rather that it was authored by a group of people, and And so one is faced when something like that is distributed to a wide variety of people. How do you really deal with that? I do not know, Mr. Chairman, members of this committee, what would prompt the issuance of a sheet of information as false as that is. In my 37 years of service, in the public service, I've run in, of course, many times to allegations, innuendos, falsehoods. What was disappointing to me, though, Mr. Chairman, is that in my service here as regional forester from 1976 to 1984, Governor Hammond and his staff worked very closely with us in the development of the Thomas Land Benefit Plan. The documents revealed letters of commendation, in fact, for the process. I was awarded the Alaska State Conservationist Award for that work in 1979 by the Alaska Wildlife Federation and Sportsman's Council. And then finally, Natural Resources and Environmental Administration of the American Society for Public Administration gave me a distinguished service award for Environmental Administration and Natural Resource Administration in 1987 and 88. I too am puzzled over this and why and cannot answer.
Thank you. We're going to take a short recess until after session.
This is going to go on a journey.
So, with that, we'll be right back.
Suggested that of all things that you were one of the founders of the Alliance for Juneau's Future, and I have a letter from you that describes this allegation, and then you sent me a copy of the letter you sent back to the folks at the environmental lobby. Made a point of saying that there was a false statement that you were a co-founder, and I just don't understand why that was such a big deal. I mean, so what if you were a co-founder?
In fact, I'd be delighted, Mr. Chairman and Senator Cotton, to be a co-founder of the Alliance for Juneau's Future. It's done a tremendous job for the community so far, and I expect it will. I can't claim credit for something that, while I was the first executive director and pleased to serve in that capacity, in fact, this group of business and labor people were the ones that met together, I think, several months before I was even aware that this effort was underway. Don't mistake me. I would be pleased to be credited with being a founder of that organization. I simply point out some of the truth.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, my problem is I look at the articles of incorporation for the Alliance for Juneau's Future Incorporated, and the initial board of directors includes John Sander and the incorporator includes John Sander, and one of the three people that signed it includes John Sander. So, you know, to a person that just as a casual observer, it looked like you were one of the co-founders of the organization. And your signature's there, and unless this document isn't correct, the Articles of Incorporation that were entered 5/22/89, certified on the 19th of May, 1989, shows that you were one of the original incorporators and directors. And, you know, I just don't understand. I guess it's just a matter of semantics here that you didn't actually found it, even though you were there when you incorporated. Well, the three signatures on the incorporation papers.
Mr. Chairman, as executive director, the first thing that I had suggested was that, in fact, we go through the process of formally incorporating as that organization, and they took my advice, and as I say, I'm pleased. But, in fact, that group of, I think, 20 or so business and labor people, in fact, had been meeting several months before that. So
it's just a matter of semantics, and it's not what it amounts to. I mean, I think you were... They claimed that you were a co-founder, and your name appears on the incorporation paper, so if I can say it to the casual observer, it might appear you were the co-founder, but my question was, why are we so concerned about that?
My concern really more is that the organization is characterized to be solely interested in mining. Indeed, the publications... The whole thrust of the organization is to promote various forms of economic diversity, and especially to improve transportation access to the capital city, including green and highway improvements, roads, and aircraft service, and energy. It's really puzzling to me why the organization is being characterized as something it really...
Well, that wasn't the point. I think I made my point. They said you were co-founder. As far as I'm concerned, you were a co-founder. But that, I don't really care, but you suggest you weren't. If I can finish, Mr. Chairman. The other question I have is, there's a letter here from the people that are now the Alliance to Senator Jones, and the letter here says, the Alliance did not take a position on the AJ mine until late March of this year, nearly 4 months after John Sander left the organization. And then I see a letter from you that says, our first objective, this is on the Alliance for Juneau's Future. Is this a letter? Are you familiar with this letter?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. A letter from you saying, our first objective is to assure reintroduction of mining to our economy, specifically starting with the environmentally sound Echo Bay AJ project. So these seem to be in conflict, too. And again, I just don't understand why people are going to such lengths to say that you weren't connected and that you didn't endorse the mine. And when in fact you did, but I'm not sure that that's a big deal that you did. But I can't understand why you say you didn't.
It's Mr. Chairman and Senator Cotton and other members of the committee. Again, I think the Juneau Empire does an excellent job of putting that into proper perspective
by
saying it's
a
half by half truths. You see, and certainly I'm executive director, but to say that simply because. The Alliance for Juneau's Future supports the reintroduction of mining in an environmentally sound manner is not to suggest that this was the sole purpose for which this organization was formed.
Let me restate my position here, mm-hmm. Mr. Senator. It's amazing to me that this is even an issue, but this letter says the Alliance did not take a position until after you left. Mm-hmm. Now, here the letter that you've signed said, our first objective is to assure reintroduction of mining, specifically starting with the environmentally sound Echo Bay AJ project. It sounds to me like you did take a position.
You don't understand, perhaps, Senator, that environmental impact statement process outlines the alternative ways in which mining could be developed.
Would you respond to my question about this letter?
Certainly.
Would you like to look at it? Maybe it's somebody wrote a letter for you here, but I'll give it another shot. I think I'm asking a pretty straightforward question. Don't feel like I'm getting an answer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's totally false that the Alliance for Juneau's Future was formed solely to support the reintroduction of the AJ mine. The articles of incorporation, the publications, the work programs and activities clearly show that That statement is false. You have identified one paper which in fact says that the Alliance for Juvenile's Future would support the reopening of the AJ mine in an environmentally sound manner. Indeed, I've made that statement a number of times that the AJ has operated for 50 years without environmentally laws and regulations, and so it should be able to operate now. But you're taking out of context what, in fact, the Alliance for Juvenile's Future, in fact, has done over the last 18 months.
Here's the question. Letter number one. It's written to Mr. Jones. Mm-hmm. It says, the Alliance did not take a position.
Did I offer that letter, sir?
No, this is from the Board of Directors, from Elizabeth Miller, Tom Cashin, Wynn Greening, Bill Cullinane, and Scott Sprickler. So you're saying they're wrong then?
I'm saying they did not take a I don't know what the letter says, but if it says they did not take a position on the environmental impact statement.
No, on the mine itself. I'm referring now back to your letter where you say, your letter that you signed, our first objective is to assure reintroduction of mining, starting with the environmentally sound AJ mine project. Those letters are in conflict, and I was trying to get a response to you as to why they might be in conflict.
Are they written by the same people, sir?
It's on the same stationery. One person has a signature on both of them. You're on one, but then you're no longer with it, so you don't appear on the other. Finally, the last thing I had on this point, Mr. Chairman, I'm really getting frustrated because I thought it was a pretty simple question. The other complaint, by the way, I hadn't seen this deal from the environmental lobby until today, so... John Sanders, Commissioner of DEC, has played favorites with the oil industry by secretly turning over draft government regulations so that the industry could suggest modifications before the documents were released to the public. Now, we all know that's true. Isn't that true?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, that's totally false.
This is what I got personal experience with, Mr. Commissioner. As you well know, we had several hearings on this, and your department, in fact, apologized to me for not giving us the copies of the regulations. By the time we finally did ask for them, it took another 10 days to get them. And meanwhile, Alyeska had already gotten them, and your department admitted that.
Would you read the statement again, sir?
Well, I didn't make this statement, but this statement says that you secretly turned them over to the industry so they could suggest modifications before the documents were released to the public.
Mr. Chairman, if you read that statement, it says I, as Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, secretly turned this over. I certainly did not. The only thing that I did was to, in fact, change the process by which these contingency plan regulations are developed. And, in fact, I learned that the contingency plan draft regulations were incomplete, that the work that had been done by our contractor had not enabled the regulations to be developed as a package. My order to the department was that they had to be developed as a package. My order to the department was that these regulations had to be developed in consultation with the Department of Natural Resources, the other state departments, the Mineral Management Service, the U.S. Coast Guard. All of this was not done. That was my order. A consequence of that was that these contingency plan regulations were released to the entire public. Whether or not Alyeska got them first, second, third, fourth, fifth, or why, I don't know. As a matter of fact, I was in Hawaii at the time in which this alleged release to Alyeska took place. And to characterize, Mr. Chairman, that I secretly released this to any element of the industry is not only totally false, but unfounded.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop here and let somebody else ask questions, and I'll back off and say that I don't know that you personally did that, but I think it's very clear, and there's no question that it happened. Do you agree with that?
I certainly do not. I agree that the sequence of events might have characterized or appeared to those who looked at that without understanding that, one, these contingency plan regulation had not been totally developed, had not been coordinated with other agencies, and reached an erroneous conclusion.
That has nothing to do with who got them first. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to quit right now and just tell you that apologize if I've seemed a little upset here, but I've tried to ask some pretty straightforward questions of the commission here. I tried to get some answers as to a sequence of events that happened, and I get an answer to a different question, and it's extremely frustrating, sir. And I apologize to you if you feel like you've been badgered here, but I felt like I had some pretty easy to understand questions and didn't get a single straight answer to them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Menard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I'd like to talk about the Alyeska terminal and the ballast water treatment. We had hearings in the Senate Oil and Gas and the Transportation Committee on the adequacy of the state's monitoring of the ballast water treatment and what's happening. I would like to hear from yourself how you view the operation that's going on there and how you see the department's role.
The department's role in the matter of monitoring the ballast water, both in inflow as well as effluent, is important. When the reports resurfaced again in February, I believe it was, that ballast water might be shifted from one tanker to another, perhaps even from other contaminated sites, and be treated at the Alyeska ballast water treatment facility. I took this with grave concern, even though on inquiry I learned that these allegations had been raised before. Nonetheless, I directed that an independent sampling system, random, be instituted to have a dual check on the influence, that is the incoming ballast water as well as the effluent. And so a random system has been established to do that. It's at random and is very limited. Additionally, one of our employees, Ian Lawn, had expressed concern about the possible continuation of that or that activity itself. And we have, in fact, asked Mr. Lawn to pursue the records of ballast water treatment at Alyeska to identify and to satisfy any concerns he has. Additionally, I made certain that not only his statements, but this entire matter of possible non-compliance with federal laws be reviewed by both the Department of Public Safety investigators as well as the Attorney General's office. It turns out that this concern about ballast water treatment was dealt with in studies in 84, 85, 86. And this current investigation of ballast water treatment activities now, in fact, the logs that are being examined by Dan Long, all of this information is being reviewed by a professional investigator from the Department of Public Safety, and this information as well turned over to the Attorney General's office. I'm gravely concerned that the integrity of that ballast water treatment process be protected, and if in fact there's any indication that there's some loophole or chance of a loophole, our intention is to intensify the sampling process itself. I was somewhat reassured this last 2 weeks, within the last 2 weeks, that the formal report to the Environmental Protection Agency as well as to the Department of Environmental Conservation by the separate contractors, independent contractors, as well as the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and then analyses of the of not only the waters, but also the sediment within the outfall area do not reveal any significant contamination. But there are some potential gaps, and we view these very, very seriously. We're considering expanding the the sampling system that I instituted in February.
And so you are taking random samplings, and you're sending those samplings to a lab and getting an analysis back?
To our own lab.
To your own lab. And to this point, you have, everything seems to be within the permit limits?
So far, the Environmental Protection Agency in Seattle and our office have not identified any violations. There have been some materials that have appeared, the source of which we're not certain, whether it's a cleansing agent or what, it's uncertain, but at least nothing has been developed to date that prompts action. That, as I say, we're investigating with the Department of Public Safety investigators as well as the Attorney General's office. But that's continuing. We're also intensifying the investigation of the log data, log books, not just present but in the past.
Okay. When the Port of Valdez was declared an impaired waterway, do you know what that was based on?
Well, the impaired definition of impaired waterway, the definition is triggered when, in fact, there are violations that have occurred in a waterway, and violations have occurred in the past, and so on. The waterway, in fact, has met that definition, and that is, in fact, part of the reason why we have the concern about that waterway, and specifically that concern about the ballast water treatment itself. So there have been violations in the past, and our intent is to try to pursue them to determine just in fact what has happened.
Well, Commissioner, as an upshot of the hearings that we had, the decision between the joint the Oil and Gas Transportation Committee that came down was we got some language in the intent language in front of the budget, and the language was the proposal was for DEC to contract with the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council to develop and implement an independent environmental monitoring program. The intent that Aliesco is to pay for the independent monitoring program, whether the costs are advanced from the 470 fund or of course from any other direct program. But the issue was that this was in an effect of implications, true or not true, that the situation as it's set up now, you have the fox guard and the hen house. And this was an attempt to create an arm's length away from that area. Will you support a proposal like this?
If the legislature feels that the University of Alaska Fairbanks assessment and the sampling that we're doing is inadequate, and that this additional type of an examination is warranted, I think it's worth consideration. I do want to reserve judgment to see what the investigation that's now underway through Mr. Long's analyses as well as through the work with the Attorney General's office before making any recommendation on that. I think that the sampling system that we have in place, random, is in fact independent in arm's length. It's processed through our own laboratories. Quite frankly, I would wonder why that couldn't be expanded as opposed to a separate analysis, but would reserve judgment until the current investigation has progressed to the department.
The one more, I'll let someone else ask a question if you want. Commissioner, somewhere in your speeches and in your talks of coming into the job that you presently have, you felt that past administrations or the role of DEC, the community relations side of that was not seen in a positive light, and I don't know if I'm paraphrasing this right, but that there needed to be some kind of a go-between the agency and the local community on either public relations or what the purpose was or what, is there a thrust in that area or what are your thoughts?
There's no thrust in that area, and this stemmed originally from a meeting with representatives of Unalaska's government in which they identified needs. The thrust is simply this, that the Department of Environmental Conservation is keenly interested in entering into formal agreements with communities to identify the issue, environmental issues, the environmental problems, and to work together to develop cost-effective solutions to those problems. And that's a major thrust. We hope to have 50 of these community agreements completed by the end of this calendar year.
But the overall role of the department is seeing that the regulatory side of the department, as well as this effort, and that the state is protected with the regulations and laws that we have. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And of course, what we're doing with the local governments is assisting them in compliance with those regulations. For identification of a problem that needs resolution, we want our expertise to mesh with that in the community and to, in fact, develop cost-effective solutions that meet those federal and state requirements.
Thank you. More questions?
I get
it. Mr. Halpern?
Mr. Chairman, I just like to say, I congratulate you for your input, influence, and activity in the Alliance for Juneau's Future. Although it might not have been the very start and you weren't a co-founder, I think it's a positive step in this town, and it's been a positive step. And I also congratulate you for your early support for the AJ Mine, with the caveats that it be environmentally sound. I'm interested to see that your statements as a forester essentially offered more wilderness than the state of Alaska's position under the Hammond administration in the D2 legislation. But I just congratulate you on your past actions, and I thank you for your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll have some testimony, and we'll start. Let's take one here in Juneau, Phil Holsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Phil Holsworth, and I'm speaking only for myself. I don't represent anybody else at this particular issue. I was Commissioner of Mines for the territory, appointed in 1952, and a year later, John Sander came up and for the Forest Service, so I've known him for a long time.
Excuse me, Phil, we're going to have to limit to 2 minutes. We are a lot of people out there, so thank you.
My work after leaving the Department of Natural Resources was mineral exploration. And I was exploration manager in Alaska for 6 years. And my first program was in Southeast Alaska, so I had a lot of dealings with the Forest Service. And I have a lot of respect for Mr. Sander and the statement that he has made about actually having recommended more wilderness area than what eventually developed indicates that he is certainly strong in environmental areas. And that's about all I have to say. I'm very much in support of his work.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to Soldotna. Dwayne Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Dwayne Anderson. I live here in Soldotna. I'm not sure whether I heard Mr. Sandor indicate he was state forester or federal forester during 1976 to 84, but I'm not so sure the track record of either of those agencies, if you will, in his forestry management was all that clever or great during that time period. When I arrived in 1982 back to the state, there was not particularly anything of any great, if you will, on the mainland at least. It may have been different in Southeast Alaska, but there wasn't much, if you will, that gave us much up here to clap about, or for that matter, even harvest, much less be happy about so far as forest harvest. But I want to talk about the questions that Mr. Sandor himself knows personally to be the case here in the Kenai Peninsula. Again, being who I am, some of you are aware, we have had throughout the last 6 months observed several problems with the state of Alaska, including the DEC, over a piece of property here called the Peninsula Greenhouse. We lost the use of that property through conversations and actions that largely involved DEC. Those DEC people were grossly, if you will, in the past administration at least, and apparently continues now into this administration, guilty of exaggeration, if not falsification, of information pertaining to that property and its problems. One problem, however, which that property does have, which was introduced by somebody to that property last August, and we can verify that timing, was the poisoning of our personal water well. That well, and the considerations of the poison put in it, has not been addressed by the DEC. Mr. Sandor is quite aware of this matter. Representative from the Kenai Peninsula here, pardon me, his name jumped my head. Anyway, letters from her indicate that she not only briefed Mr. Sandor about this matter, but that he was also briefed or mentioned about this problem by other state agency people. The bottom line is this: Mr. Sandor has done nothing. He apparently considers this to be a matter that's of non-importance. It's extremely important as we have a watershed, if you will, now infested with a poison that the DEC and DNR, for that matter, refuse to address. Also, certain of his staff here on the Kenai Peninsula, here at the local office, have impeded the investigation by the Alaska State Troopers. I have documents to this effect. I think Mr. Sandor should be questioned or questionable as to his competence or interest in matters of this importance. And with that, I'll conclude and say thank you. I look forward to testifying, if we have a possibility, on Senate Bill 178. It deals with this very issue. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Go to Homer, Nancy Lord.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Nancy Lord in Homer. And speaking today as president of the Alaska Environmental Lobby. Frankly, I'm quite upset at Mr. Sandor's attack on the Alaska Environmental Lobby, and neither do I understand it. I believe we all have the action alert to which he has referred, and I also have the lobby's response, which was promptly delivered to the commissioner's office on April 30th. As our response states, to the best of our knowledge, which we have documented, our information is correct. Not as Mr. Sandor told you a few minutes ago, totally false. Either is our action alert anonymous, it is clearly on our letterhead the position that the government was adopted by our board of directors. The position of the Alaska Environmental Lobby on Mr. Sandor's confirmation is that we strongly oppose it. His background and philosophy are consistently pro-development with little regard for environmental protection. He's absolutely unsuited to be the person in charge of the agency whose job it is to watchdog industry on behalf of the environment and the environmental health of Alaskans. He is as unfit for the task as would be an attorney general who really wasn't very interested in law, or a commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development who opposed business. The people of Alaska deserve to know that the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation is committed to environmental protection. You and we need to know that the laws you pass will be implemented and enforced, and the budgets you appropriate will be spent to carry out the agency's programs in a committed manner. Based on Mr. Sandor's past and his performance since his appointment, we certainly do not have that confidence. We ask that you vote against his confirmation and encourage the governor to take seriously the need for a healthy environment. And finally, Mr. Sandor's actions over the past few days, in which he's shown that he's unwilling to work with the environmental community in a productive manner, and his performance before your committee today speaks for itself.
Okay, thank you.
You should have received also some additional written comments from our executive director, Meyer Schwartz, during Juneau. I urge you to please take the time to read and consider them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll go to Sitka, Ed Maluski.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm Edward Lusky. I live in Sitka, and I wish to testify in favor of the confirmation of Mr. John Sandor as Commissioner of Environmental Conservation. I'm aware of Mr. Sandor's excellent reputation and his former service on behalf of Alaska. I've heard him speak to the issues that he will be facing, and I have had brief conversations with him. It is my opinion that John Sandor's confirmation is in the best interest of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dave, we go to Valdez. Dave Janka.
Yes, Dave Janka, resident here in Valdez. And thank you for this opportunity. We all use whatever kind of means to get information, and we cannot often get first-hand information. We have to rely on the media, these special interest mailings that are getting hacked apart, and the legislative information office system, and usually trust these pretty well, and then that's where I get my information. Normally, controversial issues do not come out of thin air and don't have anything backing them. I'm encouraged to hear Mr. Sandor's review of the issues ahead for his department and the role of his department, and which ones are going he sees need to be prioritized and addressed. And he certainly makes it sound that the job is going to be well done. Specifically here in Valdez, though, I haven't really heard or seen any of the funds or resources necessary to properly monitor not only the ballast water treatment facility here, but the terminal operations in general. And I feel that I would like to have you oppose the confirmation of John Sandor. This position is responsible for regulations and the enforcement of laws to protect our environment. My concern is with is that there's an impression that Mr. Sandor's past experiences, his record is pro-industry and pro-development. You know, it gives that fox in the chicken coop impression again, and the confidence in our government to protect our environment, you know, my drinking water, the air we breathe, that confidence is diminished by what seems to be these personal and politically motivated appointments. Thank you, and I would like to ask if there's any chance if one of you could explain the process that if Mr. Sandor was not confirmed, what kind of timetable is there? Is there an appointee that is then given by the governor until you are in session again next year, or somebody could explain how the process works from here on out? Thank you.
The question was what the process is, and the process is that if an appointment is not confirmed, that person cannot serve in that position after the session adjourns, essentially. The governor would then appoint another person. That person would be acting in that position until denied by the legislature or until the legislature again adjourned next year. So you'd have an 18-month interim appointment, probably, if you denied one of the current appointees.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go to Anchorage, David Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Ford. The state of Alaska and its people have invested the last 25 years developing environmental safeguards to maintain the integrity of its natural heritage. This great work, crafted by many wise souls, is a shining example to other states and nations. With the wrong administration and choice made of DEC, this wise legacy can easily be destroyed in 4 years. As the ex-director of the Alliance for Juneau's Future, John Sandor came out in favor of the proposed AJ mine reopening before any EIS statements or permitting processes were released. He stated it was an environmentally sound project. The federal and state EIS reports on the project have soundly disproved this statement. His record as head forester of the Tongass was unconsciously pro-development and showed little forethought for future generations or environmental protection. Mr. Sandor is an older gentleman in his twilight years who will not be alive for long enough to live with his legacy as we and our children will have to. It appears to me that he and many other older gentlemen in this administration do not represent the best interests of the people of the state, rather the best interests of a very small elite at the expense of the state's natural heritage and we the people who follow on. If we have learned anything from the last 48's environmental degradation, it should be that this great state warrants protection and wise stewardship. If there was such an institution as the Department of Industrial Development in the state of Alaska, John Sandor would make an ideal candidate as its chief and advocate. Alaska has an opportunity to lead the rest of the nation and the world in wise conservation and protection of its resources and to fiscally capitalize on that natural unspoiled magnificence by development of environmentally friendly business and industry. To the rest of the nation and the world, Alaska represents Earth intact, a place to come to renew one's spirit and hope in a new future. Mr. Sandor may by some be considered a leading mind in our state, but he is a leading mind of the 1950s mindset, not the much-needed visionary of the 1990s. From my humble opinion, not a wise choice to head up the very department that is responsible for carrying out the duty of protecting our precious environment, resources, and people. Thank you.
Just for people that aren't aware, the commissioner has left, and I was wondering what the intention of the chair is as far as the length of the meeting, and whether we can have the commissioner come back and answer any other questions.
We've had, you know, the committee's had their opportunity to ask questions, and we're giving the public some chance to testify here, and for the, you know, the committee's benefit, he has left to go to the House Resource Committee hearing on his appointment, and I'm sure that he's available for questions for you or anybody else.
Will the chair allow him to come back in front of the committee for further questions?
As far as the chair is concerned, this is the hearing. He's made his statement. The senators have had opportunities to question him. At the end of the testimony, and testimony will end here about 3:15, so we have an opportunity to take up a Senate bill. Then we will then make the letter through the process just like we've always done with other commissioners.
So we get no more chance to ask any more questions?
Senator, you can ask him. I'm sure it's available to you anytime to answer any questions you have of him before we vote on confirmation in joint session.
So no more chance of public?
No. The public, I don't understand.
There's no more chance to ask questions in public in a public hearing like this.
Not in, you know, not as far as the confirmation hearing goes in this committee.
I don't support that decision, but you're the chairman.
Senator Menard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we carried questions on until about 10 to 3, but I had other questions, and I did relinquish to allow some testimony. I thought we were going to get the opportunity to talk to the commissioner again, and now he's left, and it's at 3 o'clock. I had other questions. So your issue is that we call him up, talk to him on the phone?
Even not talking on the phone, I'm sure you can go to his office or have him in your office, Senator.
It's your intent that he's not going to come back?
Not before this committee, not before the confirmation hearing. Okay, continue on now. And here in Juneau, John Sitt.
Thank you very much. My name is John Sisk. I'm the Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. And for those of you who may not be familiar, we're a coalition region-wide of 13 organizations, volunteer groups throughout Southeast Alaska. Our membership includes people from all walks of life, commercial fishermen, business people from Heidelberg to Yakutat, and might add that our board of directors includes former pulp mill workers, individuals who worked with and for Mr. Sandor when he was regional forester for the Forest Service, loggers, commercial fishermen, and as a result, we're very familiar with his record, and I want to assure you that we've deliberated long and hard on what position to take with regard to his confirmation. I should tell you now that we oppose his confirmation, and this isn't a personal issue. It's merely that when we look at Mr. Sandor's track record and we look at what's happened since he retired and since his appointment, we see a consistent pattern of a man who has some demonstrated administrative capabilities, but who has also demonstrated a bias and an orientation towards the timber industry, towards the mining industry, and against environmental regulation. I've made copies of our testimony available to the committee and would like to direct you to it for details. We'll be glad to answer any questions. I would like to touch on a couple of points that came up in the questions of Mr. Sandor earlier. Sure.
We're trying to get as many people as possible in here.
Great.
Trying to keep it 2 minutes.
Is that 2 minutes?
We've had 2 minutes, but you've got a couple short...
I just wanted to flag this question of John recommending more wilderness than anybody else during the Tongass Land Management Plan, and present our perspective on that. You can recommend a lot of wilderness on the Tongass National Forest if it's almost all rocks and glaciers. And it's not fair to consider his large acreage proposal as a a true measure to protect fish and wildlife habitat, because from our vantage point, what that amounted to was a lot of acres, but the really important acres, the high volume old growth timber along the salmon streams and in the critical deer winter ranges, was for the most part targeted for liquidation by clear cut logging. So I just wanted to clarify that point.
I think he said only one third of the old growth forest would be harvested.
Well, again, unfortunately,
that's not rocks and ice. No.
Right. Unfortunately, that harvest tends to be, under that plan, was really focused on the key habitat in the valley bottom, salmon streams, and therefore was essentially, as we say, cutting the heart out of the forest. Now, I just want to point out that that program that Mr. Sandor administered and developed did create so much conflict within the region that Congress, for a variety of reasons, stepped in and exercised their authority to reform Tongass management. And I frankly don't think that speaks very optimistically for the kind of environmental protections that we're likely to see from the department, from DEC. I don't want to take up too much more time. I just want to say we are dedicated to working with DEC. We just think that this may be the wrong matchup of the individual and his policies with the post. Thank you very much.
Senator Knopf.
Just with regard to even the same areas, it's my understanding that in specific areas, in almost all the areas, John Sanders' position was for more wilderness than the state of Alaska's position in the Hammond administration. So not just mountaintops, not just rocks. He essentially took the federal position, which was a position opposed by an awful lot of Alaskans. The legislature passed resolutions on it. There was, you know, certainly the timber reform, I don't know if you think it would have passed if it had been on a popular vote statewide, but John Sanders seemed to be on the environmental side of that question more than the majority of Alaskans did.
Well, there's a couple of, I think those are some good points. There's a couple of them there, and I think you may be right with regard to the official state position in D2. With regard to the Timber Reform Act, I would just point out there were 16 communities that supported Tongass reform, and that an independent poll did show that 75% of Southeast Alaskans supported some varying measure of additional lands protection reform of the Tongass. So I think those are good points. I do think, though, that in perspective, Alaskans have supported more attention to fish and wildlife habitat than was embodied in Mr. Sandor's plan for the Tongass.
Well, they certainly didn't in 1980 when he was making the plan.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Back to Anchorage, Pam Brody.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Pamela Brody, and I'm speaking in opposition to the confirmation of John Sandor for several reasons. First of all, I think it makes no sense to put people in charge of regulating their own industry and enforcing the laws against their friends and former colleagues. Mr. Sander, as Executive Director of Alliance for Juneau, has been an active proponent of the mining industry as the, quote, first objective, unquote, of the organization. If he wants to promote mining, that's fine. I have no objection to people promoting increased mining, but such people should not be put in charge of regulating mining. Mining is a highly polluting industry. I just don't think they would have the proper, necessary commitment to enforcing pollution violations against miners. Second, as Forest Service employee, Mr. Sanders' responsibility was to the citizens of the United States, not to the timber industry nor to the citizens of Japan. Yet he aggressively pursued a policy of maximum logging, despite the fact that Americans were getting a return on timber sales of only pennies for the dollar of cost. Basically, Americans, through taxpayer subsidies, were paying to have our trees cut down so the timber companies could sell them abroad at a profit. That Mr. Sander would have the interests of Alaskans at large, including our largest employer, the fishing industry, over the special interests of the loggers is something that I don't feel very reassured about. And finally, I've been disturbed by the actions of DEC in its release of draft regulations to Alyeska for comments and suggested changes to the department before they were released to the public. Mr. Sander said in his defense today that the regulations were not in a final form, but this is hardly an excuse for giving them to the industry against proper procedures. It also indicated that it was not he who personally handed these papers over to the oil industry, but there's been no indication that he objected to the actions of his assistant. They have physically handed over the pieces of paper. All in all, I've not found Mr. Sander's testimony any more reassuring than his record. Thank you.
Thank you. Go to Homer Gail Parsons.
My name is Gail Parsons. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, Mr. Chairman and committee members. The constitutional mandate for the Department of Environmental Conservation is to conserve and protect our air, land, and water. Committee members, it is your responsibility to see this mandate is carried out. Mr. Sander's history as forester, part in the 1980 Alaska Lands Act, are good examples of why he is not the man for this position. Under Mr. Sander, the implementation of House Bill 567 regulations has been delayed. This is very important legislation in the spirit of conservation and needs to be implemented, not delayed. Under Mr. Sander, DEC's recent lack of complete cooperation with the legislature during oversight hearings on Alyeska and Taft tank operation are a very serious indication that his leadership is not what this department needs. As an indicator organism suffering from pollution-related illnesses, I respectfully urge you to ask the governor to look for someone who does not have Mr. Sander's biases and who will actively work to implement legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm here to Juno Bill Blute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Bill Blute from Juneau. I'm a self-employed small businessman, speaking for myself. I have not had the opportunity to work directly with John Sandor, but I happen to have a rather large network of contacts within industry and within the general public, within the government, within interest groups around the state, which I've checked with to ascertain what his reputation is and what his past record is. And I guess the best way to put it is to ask you for a moment to change your perspective and imagine that the Democrats had won in the gubernatorial race and that I had been proposed as former environmental lobby director for something like the Director of Commerce and Economic Development or Oil and Gas Division, perhaps. And I would expect that industry and pro-development groups would rightly be expressing their concern about my ability to represent their interests. And I would hope that in your deliberations, the key thing you would be looking for would be qualities of statesmanship and the ability to work with diverse groups and to represent interests which have formerly perceived a person as being hostile to them. And in checking on John Sandor's record, what I've found essentially is that he has not demonstrated that capability, that his credibility within the segment of our population that has worked on environmental issues is extremely low. He has essentially no credibility. I would, further giving him the benefit of the doubt, expect that he would have worked hard to build that sort of credibility and to build a good working relationship with the interest groups which his agency is particularly representing since his appointment, and I fail to see any sort of record of that either. With that in mind, I'd say just on the basis of credibility and reputation that he doesn't have the capability to be an effective commissioner. And I would strongly recommend against his confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you. Go to Senator Halverson.
Bill, just a comment. You know, if in fact we had a different governor and they had appointed you, you probably would have gotten confirmed, because there's an overwhelming or a very large number of people in the legislature that tend to go along with the appointment of the governor. I've gone along with the lawyers for the opposite side on important issues in fish and game, in DNR, in major issues in the dozen or so years that I've been involved. And I am one who generally votes for the designees of the governor unless there is something debilitating about them, a dishonesty, a major difference. I know that a governor that
I have worked against, opposed, and disagree with is probably going to appoint people that disagree with me. But as long as they can do the job, I have consistently supported them through the last three administrations. Just a point in terms of how the process ends up kind of working.
If I may respond, Mr. Chairman, Senator Helfert, I'd certainly agree, have a very important point. The governor does have a right to some extent to appoint people who agree with him philosophically. However, I think in this case, it's a case of a definite conflict with the duties and the primary mission of the department that is very significant and overrules and overrides that consideration. Thank you.
I'm going to restrain myself.
All right. Let's go to a sitter. Larry Edwards.
Thank you very much. My name is Larry Edwards. I'm a 14-year resident of Sitka. DC is charged with the responsibility of protecting public health and welfare and the integrity of the environment. This is a vital responsibility, and to be successful, the agency must execute the law fully and must function above politics. The agency must act on professional judgment, not on political motivation. The legislature's responsibility to assure that whoever is appointed as commissioner has a heartfelt dedication to lead the agency in fulfilling statutory policy, both in spirit and letter. John Sandor is not that man. This is a time to invoke the check of our checks and balances in our form of government. I offer this relevant anecdote about Mr. Sandor. After many years of preparation, the Forest Service issued the Tongass Land Management Plan, TLUMP, in 1979. Among other things, it established four land classifications, otherwise known as land use designations, or LUDs. Every watershed in the Tongass is classified as one of these LUDs, which ranges from LUD 1, which is wilderness, to LUD 4, which is open to intensive logging. The draft TLUMP classifications were made by an interdisciplinary team, an IDT team, composed of Forest Service professionals with expertise in a variety of areas, including forestry, soils, hydrology, and wildlife habitat. The IDT decision was that the Caddisshan River drainage be classified as LUD 2, which is closed to logging. Mr. Sandor rescinded the IDT's decision, and by executive fiat, he designated Caddisshan as LUD 3, open to logging. There's nothing in law or regulation which dictated or even suggested that a LUD 3 designation was called for, and a LUD 3 designation was simply made by Mr. Sandor's personal whim. Mr. Sandor then commenced construction of a major arterial logging road through the drainage, and that action resulted in immediate successful litigation by the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Mr. Sandor continued construction until SEAC obtained an injunction. On all counts, Mr. Sandor's single-minded LUD 3 designation, his letting of the construction contract under threat of suit, and his continuance of construction after litigation was begun. On all these counts, Mr. Sandor's action cost the federal government many millions of dollars, and if not stopped, would have resulted in severe damage to resources. Last year, Congress made the original IDT proposal law by making Caddisshan a congressionally designated LUD 2 area. Mr. Sandor's decisions on Caddisshan were wrong at every step, and were contrary to the recommendation of his professional staff. Not only were his decisions on Caddisshan disparaged by his professionals, but also by the other two branches of government, Congress and the courts. Why? The reason is that Sitka's Alaska Pulp Corporation was fighting tooth and nail to get into Caddisshan and log it. Caddisshan was their number one place where they wanted to log, and simply put, Mr. Sandor went to bat for a logging company rather than follow the proper course of action charted by his professionals. Caddisshan illustrates but one of Mr. Sandor's fiduciary failures. Other policies and decisions instituted by Mr. Sandor while he was regional forester are at the core of other successful litigation throughout the Tongass National Forest. Mr. Sandor retired before this litigation was brought, but he is responsible for much of it.
I'd like to get one more in general here, please. Thank you for your testimony. Let's see. Judy Cooper.
My name is Judy Cooper. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. I think one of the important things to say here is that my frustration as an individual citizen concerning the confirmation of this gentleman before you, I would like to state, first of all, that I oppose it. I have lived in this area, Southeast Alaska, for 20 years, and I've had experience with his management of the forest, which I did not feel was in the best interest of the people of Alaska or the United States. I've had experience sitting on a committee with Mr. Sandor here in Juneau concerning the mine, and when I heard the testimony that he gave to you on direct questioning, it reminded me again and again of the experience that we've had with Mr. Sandor, is that he hides behind these various jostling of facts and figures, behind the government jargon and rules, and that the best interest of the people is not served. And this is a person who's very skillful at this manipulation, and I feel that he is the wrong person to guard our very precious environment here in the state of Alaska, a person who favors exploitation of natural resources and the industry and the jobs over the environment. This is not a personal affront on this person. I like him as a person, but as for the person who is the head of environmental conservation, I think he is the wrong person. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to have to end the testimony at this time. I would encourage everyone to put written testimony in to committee and POMs, to all the senators. The real vote comes in a joint session sometime in the probably next couple weeks. I encourage your written testimony.
It'd be funny if we got in a joint session.
With that, we'll close the hearing, and we'll move on to Senate Bill 178.
But what I, you know, typically you just send a thing out and vote out once.
It is.
I wasn't
making
it.
And we can, we'll take up this letter right now, and, you know, we won't want it to be unanimous. Someone needs to make a motion to move it out. I would like that motion, and
you can't do that, though, because if there's even one stated objection, then the letter's not accurate. You already know Joe, man. You want a committee report?
No, do not pass.
Write a different letter.
We can't. That's why I said we can reword it if
you'd
like.
You can just leave off the first part here. Says, we've had a meeting on this guy, and
well,
so we can sign the letter.
doesn't mean how we're going to vote on the floor.
Well, it doesn't. It says it doesn't. Yeah. You know, that part of it's correct. But the first part,
it says there's no stated objection.
I don't know what they are. Okay.
Well,
what it is really is a letter that says we had the hearing.
Yeah, but you know, it is always awkward for him now.
It is.
So I've always thought that he was going to start doing this letter.
Please stand by.
From this side, so
it's crazy.
The form of the letter doesn't. I mean, does it change?
So there's no objection.
Yeah. But it does go to the form.
It's just like that.
There is an objection.
I wouldn't sign the letter if I had stated an objection. I think it'd be an inconsistent letter to sign. So,
well, Well,
I don't know
this
why
says
it's put that way.
But it just says that, that there weren't any.
Yeah, I know. So if I had made an objection, I wouldn't sign the letter.
Yeah.
But then if anybody else signs it, they're saying that there was no
objection. Oh, that's a good point.
Okay. Yeah.
What if it says the undersigned have no stated objections?
There you go.
And then what? You not sign it?
Right. And anyone has an objection, not sign it. Or sign it, you know, down below.
Why don't we, objections or something else? You can write your own comment.
Why don't we just leave out the part about no stated objections?
Right. That would work.
Well, actually, I don't know. Were there any stated objections? There, I didn't hear any.
Yeah, I just didn't get a chance. He wouldn't, you know. I'm kind of bothered by the way you ran the meeting, to be honest with you. I thought you should have, you know, maybe if you wanted to ask the commission more questions, I think you should have, you know, given the opportunity to do that.
Well, I did. I mean,
no,
you could
have
kept asking questions.
I'd like to guess the commission for about 4 or 5 days.
Well, that's. We had 20 minutes to ask the guy a question, well, and he had to leave. So, what, you know, that mean I don't get that. I just didn't appreciate that.
I think you're right, yeah.
You look at it.
Senator Frank,
who's
178. Is this the? I'm glad you finally saw the wisdom of my former recommendation, which is to move it on.
Okay.
All
right.
We're gonna do a quick close meeting.
Actually, just on a positive note, we did have a positive work session, Senator, and we're working on another work draft. We're trying to incorporate some of the ideas that came out in the last meeting. Working with the department, and it's possible that we come up with something, but we can handle that in the next committee, I suppose.
So what you want to do?
I thought that.
I guess it did. You know what?
I think Senator Frank will still have his hands on the bill.
Mr.
You ready for a motion?
Well, wait a minute. We have to. What bill are you? Did you bring us a CS? Is this the CS now? That
I guess I did. It was the original CS we brought to last week. Some
bills get
bumped to death.
Seven.
Senator Frank.
Some or another. That guy has a long memory. I don't know why. But.
Senator Frank. Is this the? Is it? Would you give us a number on the draft there that you're?
The draft, I think, is 427.
Is 427? 91.
Perhaps we could have Teresa come up to the table and make sure we're on the right track here.
Well,
we
don't want
the draft we previously brought before the committee, because you haven't got the new draft yet back. That's
the
result
of
more recent work. Right?
The one that you brought before the committee was 419B. The one that, the most recent one that was worked on by the subcommittee was Y, 427.
I guess I forgot we had
We're not in the original.
That's what
I wanted.
We're
going
to do that.
Then, Mr. Chairman, it should be. It should be work draft 7LS0416/B, dated 4/19/91. That is the one that we brought before the committee the last time we had it before the full committee.
That's the one I objected to. There.
Yes.
I think it probably. I didn't realize you had an objection.
Yeah, I objected to that.
Which one?
I think you were. That's why we sent it back. That's why we sent it back.
416Y?
And we didn't. And Mr. Chairman, I thought we had a work session that we're going to propose another CS. Wasn't that the?
Yeah, we were. But now I get the chairman's desire is to move the bill up to judiciary, and I had suggested that when I brought it back. So I didn't want to hold it up any further.
What's the sponsor?
I'm
That's
ready what I'd like to know.
What's that?
I would rather go ahead
to judiciary.
Which one?
Well, Bill or Cedars?
We have three in front of us.
What's happening? I'll move B if nothing else. I move we adopt the CS, which has got the D after all those letters and numbers.
Object.
Okay. All right. Motion on the floor, objection. Any discussion? All right.
No, I'm opposed.